Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. It is the middle of August, but we still have NBA to talk about. We're going to dissect the opening week schedule today, as well as the Christmas Day slate. And we're going to play some NBA Would You Rathers. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also check us out on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. They are in the midst of a top 100 players countdown, so that's a good thing to follow. My fantasy basketball team previews have come out. The first five are out, and they'll keep trickling out over the next couple weeks. The Bulls are out today. It's not a good site for the Bulls. So FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter. Joining me this week, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
It's been a busy week, Brian. My son not only started his first day in school, he also had his first football practice and had his sixth birthday. So I'm beat,
hey, man. Oh my gosh, that is a busy week.
That's a big week.
Yeah. And Sarah, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. How was the first day of school there, Mort?
He was very excited. It was only like 90 minutes and it was like a small introduction thing. So today was like his first legitimate school day. And he just looked at me afterwards when I picked him. I was like, I'm tired. Yeah.
Oh, buddy.
Learning is hard.
Did you tell him he has 12 to 16 more years of that?
Yeah, he's aware, and he's actually looking forward to it, and what is keeping his moods up is basically, he's very good at English, and so I'm telling him, like, so when that, you know, that when that subject arises, you don't need to worry, you're pretty much there already, it's going to be like a somewhat easy course for you, and he's like, oh, okay, good, then I can relax, yeah. So that, it's a really, really small foundation of how I built the entire thing on. It could collapse at any point.
I think that's the way to do it. Good work there. All right, let's go into the opening week schedule, which the NBA released Thursday. We haven't gotten the full schedule yet, so this is just the national TV schedule that first week. The season starts Tuesday, October 17th. Boston takes on Cleveland, and then the Rockets take on the Warriors. That's the Warriors ring night as well. The next night, we get Sixers, Wizards, and Timberwolves, Spurs. Thursday, we get Knicks, OKC, and then Clippers, Lakers. And Friday, we get Cavs, Bucks, and Warriors, Pelicans. Sarah, which of those games are you most excited to see?
Well, you know, I'm excited about Spurs Wolves.
No,
pretty happy about that. Yeah, I actually kind of like Sixers Wizards too. Like, that's a good night.
Yeah,
I don't know how ready the Sixers will be. I think they're going to be pretty decent this year. Maybe not right off the bat though. So maybe it won't be as good of a game as I'm hoping it'll be. But yeah, honestly, when I saw that, I kind of like tunnel visioned and didn't pay attention to any of the rest because I heard Wolves Spurs and I was like, what? All right. So yeah, that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, that is gonna be a good one. I mean, not only just for the Spurs reasons, but also like the new look. This is our first look at the new look.
Oh, exactly.
I'm super excited to see Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague, how they all fit. It's gonna be, I mean, Kawhi versus Jimmy, that's gonna be
that's always fun already. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wish the Wolves would not show up in those uniforms, though.
Oh, you're not a fan?
I am not a fan. Those are hideous. Like, that's so unfortunate. Oh, my God.
I'll be honest. I haven't really liked any of the new uniforms.
Can someone tell me why people are, like, just gushing over Indiana's horrible, horrible design?
Oh, no. Yeah. That was... Oh, no. No.
I am not understanding the love that the Pacers jerseys are getting. I think it's horrendous. Jesus.
Yeah. And like then Denver took the Pacers old jerseys basically.
Yeah.
Which is also weird. And the Sixers one, whatever. It's not a huge change, but I like the old ones better. And Let's see. Maybe the alternative. Maybe they'll do like the throwback jerseys that opening night. That'd be cool.
Basically, holding out hope that those third and fourth options for a lot of teams are going to be good. Yeah, because right. If not, yeah, it's a disappointment.
Yeah, yeah. But on the bright side, all of the old jerseys that we like will go on sale because the NBA is just going to like clear them out. So you'll get like a $50 Pau Gasol jersey, which I know you always wanted, Sarah.
First in line, yeah.
Moit, what about you? Which games on the opening week are you most excited to see?
Well, Spurs Wolves. I mean, I can't front. That's like the big matchup for me as well. Also, I mean, I'm kind of digging Markelle Fultz going up against John Wall. Like, here you go, Markelle.
Yeah, I'm not digging that. That's a rude introduction to the NBA.
Yeah. Well, you know, it best to be educated immediately, right?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously excited that the Sixers are in both the opening week and Christmas Day. Knock on wood, they will have everyone healthy, at least at the start of the season. So this, for all we know, this is the only time we'll see Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid play together in a nationally televised game all year. I hope that's not the case, but the past few years have conditioned me to believe otherwise. So that one will be fun. You know, I'm just super excited to see the Sixers field a real basketball team for the first time since they traded for Andrew Bynum.
How did that go, Brian? I don't even remember. How did that go? Could you walk me through it? I don't remember. He played well, didn't he, for the Sixers, right?
He did. You know, we're doing this thing at the Step Back. I think it rolls out not this coming week, but the week after, like a butterfly effect thing where, like, what if X happened? Imagine, like, the alternate timeline. So I obviously immediately when I heard that, I was like, what if Andrew Bynum didn't go bowling?
Yeah.
So I'm writing a long fake, this is like darkest Sixers timeline, because it ends up with like just a bunch of it. Like, that team was so effing bad. Like, just having to relive, it was like Evan Turner might have been the fourth best player on that team. Like, Spencer Hawes was a fixture of that team. Like, Jason Richardson, and I mean, Drew Holiday's actually good, and he had just signed a new deal, but it's beside the point. But yeah, the Sixers have not been a real basketball team for 5 years, so I'm very excited to see them actually feel a real team. I'm also, like, Rockets-Warriors that first night is going to be super fun. Like, that might be, I mean, you know, we're going into the year saying, like, those are the two best teams in the West. Like, we might have the conference finals previews on both sides on October 17th with Boston, Cleveland, and then Rockets, Warriors. So, we get Boston, Cleveland will be fun. We don't know if Kyrie's going to be there. I'm excited to see how Gordon Hayward affects that matchup. Like, the last time we saw Cavs Celtics, it did not end very well for the Celtics, but now, you know, they have Gordon Hayward, they have Jason Tatum. We get to see if Jaylen Brown in year two, he looked like a beast in summer league. We'll see if that translates to the regular season. We'll see if the Cavs summer of dysfunction affects their on-court product. And then Rockets at night, like, this is our first chance to see Chris Paul and James Harden in action. It's gonna be super fun. But overall, I just feel like the NBA, the Thursday night slate kind of sucks. I mean, Kristaps against OKC will be fine, I guess. And then
Kristaps, yeah.
That's, I'm not referring to the Knicks. Like, I don't care about anyone else on that team, but Kristaps versus Paul George will be fun.
Oh, the old George Mikan throwback, George Mikan against the Knicks, if you remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And then Clippers Lakers is whatever. I mean, Lonzo Ball, sure, great. But, like, I guess I'm excited to see Patrick Beverley shut down Lonzo Ball.
Oh.
And shut him into, like, a 3 of 16 night.
I hadn't thought about that one. Yeah, I'm going to tune in to watch Beverley just put the clamps on. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to see Twitter burn when Lonzo has. I mean, the reaction to his first bad summer league game was already fantastic, so when he has a bad regular season debut, it's gonna be fun. But then also, Bucks on Friday versus the Cavs. You got Greek Freak early, that's gonna be good. And then we get Pelly's Warriors on Friday night. You know, Boogie, Brow, that 2 years ago, that Pelicans team, they got swept, but like they were competitive against the Warriors in the playoffs. So now we get Boogie with a full training camp, full preseason, mm-hmm.
And weight loss.
And weight loss, yeah, right? He's looking good. Rajon Rondo in a Pelicans jersey. We get to see whether he can recapture the magic that he had with Boogie in Sacramento. We get to see Drew Holiday at the two. It's going to be, I don't know. I really think I want to commend the NBA for that. Is like a captivating slate of games throughout the week. Thursday it might be good that those are like the worst of the week, because then like, you know, we can spend a day with our spouses that week. You need to take a break at some point before they file for divorce in the first week of the regular season. Let's go to the Christmas Day games now. So the 12 o'clock game, Sixers at the Knicks. 3 o'clock, no surprise, Cavs at Warriors. 5:30, Wizards at Celtics. 8 o'clock, Rockets at Thunder. 10:30, Timberwolves at Lakers. Sarah, no Spurs on the slate, so which game here are you most excited for?
Maybe Wizards. It might be Wizards.
Yeah. Wizards.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not fired up about Cavs Warriors Part 3 on Christmas, so you know, I'm glad like you that the Sixers are playing, mm-hmm. but you know, not psyched about it being against Kristaps, as you would say. I feel like the NBA is somehow obligated, apparently, to have a game at Madison Square Garden on Christmas. It's yeah. just, you know it's going to happen, but every time you're like, why? Why, right. please? I think Josh Eberle had posited, like, Sixers-Bucks, and I would have loved to see that. But
oh, that would have been fun.
Not to be, apparently.
Sixers-Wolves for me. I think the NBA dropped the ball.
I'll take that, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because then we could have re-legislated Towns versus Okafor.
Yep.
Not Towns versus Embiid. Yep. Towns versus Okafor. I reread an article I wrote a couple years ago where I was like, yeah, that'll be a debate for a long time. Towns versus Okafor. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. nope. Turns out it was not. I was a little hasty in writing that. Boy, what about you? What's catching your eye on Christmas Day?
Well, the Wolves for one, but I'm with Sarah. Basically, you know, the Wizards. I'm really stoked about the Wizards as well. I've been spending all summer talking about the Wolves and the Sixers, but the Wizards are just, they came on, you know, so great last season. Otto Porter is returning. He's probably going to get better. Bradley Beal is going to get better. John Wall is going to get better. I'm really looking forward to seeing what that team is going to bring. So having them in a Christmas game situation is just, yeah, I'm definitely going to catch that one for sure. Also, yes. Thank you to the NBA for keeping the Bulls off that list, because they were like a permanent fixture during like the, you know, the Christmas Day, and like for the most part, those Bulls games were just horrid every damn right. year. So,
yep.
Good on you, NBA.
I forget where someone tweeted this yesterday. I don't remember who it was, so apologies for not attributing this. But I think someone said the Bulls only have one national TV game this year.
It could be. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Like,
but that's awesome. If the NBA really had the foresight to be like, this Bulls team is going to be hot garbage, we are not featuring them at all.
I have no idea. I haven't even checked. But if it's only one game, I would imagine it would be like Bulls against the Heat in Miami.
I think it was Timberwolves.
Jimmy's return. Okay, yeah, yeah, makes sense. Okay, sure.
And yeah, but it's
that's just hard. I mean, that's rough on Bulls fans. That's just like rubbing it in. Like, hey, everyone, come watch that horrible trade. Like, look, that the greatest player you've had since Michael Jordan is gonna fucking bury you. Come on, Bulls fans.
It's like when you break up with someone and then they come back dating someone way hotter.
Yeah.
You're like, oh no. Oh,
and a better and someone who's a better person as well, Brian. The insights matter.
Right, yeah. A successful doctor who is a good person at heart and also a supermodel.
And who adopts, you know, puppies with three legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm with you guys. Wizards, Celtics, sorry. I think that one's going to be super fun. I just love the bad blood that those two have. Like, I want nonstop funeral games. Which team shows up in black on Christmas? That's going to be a fun thing to see. Yeah, Sarah, I'm with you. Cavs, Warriors, whatever. We're probably going to see it in the finals this year. I don't care. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN did note when he was discussing the Christmas Day schedule that, you know, teams that are free agents who signed new contracts this summer with new teams are eligible to be traded December 15th. So if the Cavs wait until then to trade Kyrie, there's a non-zero chance that they're breaking in a new point guard, you know, with like 5 days
to spare. That's my biggest fear is that, yeah, it could be really ugly. Like,
yeah.
I'm not expecting it to be a great game anyway, but yeah, something happens with Kyrie and yeah, could be not at all what the NBA bargained for.
Correct, yeah. And that's why I'm also really scared of that Sixers game, because that's 2 months into the year. Just everyone say a prayer for Joel Embiid's knees, because I would love for him to be on national TV on Christmas, but 2 months into the season scares me. But also, Rockets Thunder, I think that's going to be... I need to pray my wife is working on Christmas, so I have an excuse to just watch all these games and I don't get in trouble. That's really the best case scenario.
I always plan a couple of months ahead, actually, so everyone knows that I'm not available at that particular day. Like, no one can, you know, text me, DM me, whatever. I'm not responding. Like, get the hell off my feet, whatever you're doing. Just leave me alone. Yeah. Right. All day.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you, Mort. All right, let's move into our... So this is going to be inspired by a few friends of the podcast. One is Ian Levy, the editor of The Step Back on Fansided. He, if you write for The Step Back, you know we get these entertaining daily email threads with some topics to throw out there, and occasionally he throws out these NBA would you rathers, like would you rather player A or player B, and somehow he has a knack for choosing ones that are always just like, ooh, damn, this is a really good question. But then our boy James Hollis, Snotty Drippin on Twitter, and Jesse Blanchard of B-Ball Breakdown just posted an article, I think Wednesday, about Nikola Jokic versus DeMarcus Cousins that basically burned basketball Twitter to the ground for 2 days. So I think that's a good place to start. Jokic and Cousins. And a few ground rules before we get underway is we are only thinking about the 2017-18 season. We are not taking contract into account. So this is really, we are taking injury history, but otherwise it is just on a pure talent and production basis, which player would you rather have? So, Mort, Jokic or Cousins?
Boogie. That's pretty easy for me. I think Boogie is grotesquely underrated. I think, yeah, he has some maturity issues, he has some efficiency issues, but his talent is just so undeniable. And you know, we should not take age into, you know, it shouldn't factor into our decision. But there is one element that we need to discuss. DeMarcus is going to be 27 when the season starts. That's like smack dab middle in his prime year, or Jokic is going to be like 22. So you would expect Boogie to have a better season, especially given that he has a full training camp with the Pelicans and whatnot, like has, you know, a better feel for the game with Anthony Davis alongside him. And he's overall just a better player. Like, people forget he drained 36% of his long balls last year, and you know, bumped that up to almost 38 with the Pelicans. On almost 6 attempts a game, he gets to the line, hits free throws, he rebounds fantastically, and he's also a pretty good passer. People really don't talk about DeMarcus's passing, and everyone is like high on Jokic's passing, which is understandable because, you know, the Joker can pass. Like, I'm not even gonna argue otherwise. So the key issue here is efficiency and defense. Jokic is not a strong defender, could be down the line, but so far isn't. DeMarcus, when motivated, is actually a plus defender. At least, you know, that's obviously subjective. but there are moments when he's really into the game, when he's fired up. He makes these great plays. He just rotates the perfect at the perfect time. He blocks shots. He grabs steals. And he just forces turnovers. If you get that DeMarcus Cousins, and I think we will, then he is head and shoulders above Jokic for this upcoming season.
So you are team James Holis in this one.
Yep.
Sarah, how about you? Jokic or Boogie?
I had my answer all prepped, but see, then... Because I thought again that it was build around. It's not build around, right? It's next year.
Yeah.
That makes it tougher for me. Because I was going to say Jokic because I just would rather build around a guy like Jokic. I think Boogie, as you mentioned more, he can be a plus defender when motivated. But I think like 90% of the time he doesn't care about defense.
Right.
So I'd rather have a guy like Jokic who I think cares, but he still just has work to do and hopefully can get better. For next year though, man, Boogie is incredibly skilled, like ridiculously skilled.
Mm. Oh, this is hard.
This is such a tough one.
I can see it. You're looking over the ceiling, you're going,
I am. Man. Yeah, because I was stupid, and we said we were going to screw up on our parameters, and I already did.
Come on, Sarah.
Screw it. I still want Jokic.
Got burned there. Yeah, okay.
Spurs
now
fans
I'm gonna get burned
together.
When everybody figures Jokic out, and Boogie has a great year, and Jokic has a down year. Oh, yeah. Man.
No, Jokic, both of them, I mean, we should note that pretty much everyone we're going to talk about, with one glaring exception, is really good. Like, this isn't a one guy is good and one guy is bad. It's like, you have two good options, and which one would you prefer? And I do see the arguments for both guys, but I do slightly lean, if we're going 2017-18 only, I'm going Boogie as well. I'm not going to cite his defense as the reason I want him, because I think both are actually just pretty bad to mediocre defenders.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
You said, for Boogie it's more of an effort thing, whereas Jokic I think it's really more of a he's just getting up to speed. But I would not expect, if I'm building around Boogie, I would not expect him to anchor a top five defense by any means. Like, I don't think he's gonna become Rudy Gobert anytime soon. But as you noted, the fact he hit, you know, 36% of his threes, he hit 1.8 per game, like that. He barely shot threes in the first 5 years of his career, and then all of a sudden, he's taking 3.2 in 2015, 2016, taking five this year. He's hitting him an above average clip. Pair that with 27 points, 11 rebounds, nearly five assists, a steal, and a block per game. Like, his all around production is so good. He's like, you know, he's not nearly as strong defensively as like late 2000s Dwight Howard, but he's putting up like those numbers with three pointers otherwise.
Yeah,
which is just I'm really, really excited to see how he and Brow work with, you know, I'm not out on that experiment yet, because it's hard for any mid-season acquisition to get up to speed quickly, especially one as high usage as Boogie, where you like really have to retail your offense. It's not like he's just a standstill shooter and you can just like stand at the corner and we'll give you a three-pointer every once in a while. Like, you have to really recalibrate everything. It's just going to be so fun to see if he and Brow can figure it out, because if they do, they're going to be that. Like, that might be the antidote to small ball. We might have found it. There's two big guys who can do everything.
Like, literally everything, which is ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. All right, let's move on. This one's going to be fun for Boyd. Jimmy Butler or Paul George? Sarah, I'm going to give you first crack at this one.
I'm a Jimmy person myself, which I'm assuming is the way that Mort is going to go. I just prefer his efficiency, his consistency. Like, they're so close. They're both good defenders, really good defenders. They're both great scorers. But Paul George has had those dips throughout years recently that, you know, you feel like that's probably going to happen again. I know we're just looking at next year. And you just, well, I don't know. He's going with, are we looking at what team they're on too? Or are we just theoretically?
Just theoretically, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still Jimmy. Just his, what he did last year with that Bulls team. I have to give Jimmy the edge.
Moit, I'm assuming you are also in Sarah's camp for this one.
I'm just sitting here nodding because obviously, yeah. Look, yeah. Jimmy has almost a five PER advantage. He has a PER of 25. Paul George 20. Paul, and here's the thing with Paul as well. Paul is longer, arguably more athletic, but even so, he doesn't like get out and just grabs those 9 to 10 rebounds that he should. He's not that disruptive as a defender as Jimmy is, and. Look, at least we forget, Jimmy has T-Rex arms. Like, it's ridiculous. Right. Jimmy's arms are so short, which goes against conventional wisdom that, you know, hey, you can only be a strong defender if you have long wingspan and, you know, all these things. And Jimmy's like, well, look at me. Look at what I'm doing. And the fact is, Jimmy just he carries a team better. Paul is a better shooter. He's arguably a more efficient raw scorer from the field. That's not even arguable. He is. But Jimmy just does everything. He gets to the line like 10 times a game. He rebounds. He dishes. Like he's a much better playmaker. And also, I can't forget the fact that he just owned Paul on so many late game situations. Like hit that tip alley oop over him, blocked his shot. He's just, I mean, Jimmy has his name, really. I mean, it's unbelievable. So Kawhi
has both of their names.
Oh yeah, oh for sure, I'm not even gonna go into that one. Kawhi, he owns both of them. He's just looking at those two like, yeah, just I'm glad you didn't bring me into that debate because I would have crushed him. So yeah, definitely, Jimmy over Paul George, and Kawhi over damn near everybody.
The Kawhi one makes me think. I just thought of a new one, so we'll get there in a second. But for Jimmy, I agree with you guys. I think Jimmy's playmaking is really what separates him in my mind. Like, both of them are strong two-way wings. But the fact that Jimmy can create shots for others better than George can really gives him the advantage. Like, I mean, just... Sarah, as you said, what he did with that Bulls team last year, that Bulls team was absolute garbage. To drag them into playoff contention is an absolute miracle. Like, it just shouldn't have happened. And Jimmy, I mean, I think this year, anyone who has been lucky enough not to watch the Bulls for the past few seasons, you'll want to watch the Timberwolves this year because they're going to be fun. And you'll get more of an appreciation for how good Jimmy Butler is.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that one because he's been so underrated for a long time now. And I get it. Like, it's Chicago. It's a place where logic does not exist anymore. So, you know, it's only natural that he gets buried. Side note to this pairing here or this comparison, given how cheaply OKC got Paul George, like, if Chicago had succeeded in beating that offer, like, overpaying extensively in terms of what, you know, OKC gave up, and they had not traded Jimmy Butler, how would a Jimmy Butler-Paul George pairing have been in the Eastern Conference in this day and age?
Ooh.
I would have loved that one.
Damn. Yeah, well, that would have filled 2 more All-Star spots.
yeah, it would have. But I mean, that it's just the Bulls pulled the trigger on the Jimmy deal, and then they saw Indiana give up Paul George for peanuts. I'm sure they could have made a competitive offer at least, and then they was we could have had both.
I really feel like Indiana's logic for that deal was like, Oladipo was so good at Indiana in college, he's definitely going to recapture that magic in the NBA. Like, that's the only logical explanation for that deal. Because OKC is not pulling that off the table. Like, at no point is OKC, like, a week into free agency going to be like, oh, no, we don't want to trade for that superstar. We don't want to get off of Oladipo's bad contract and give up Sabonis, who really didn't do all that much as a rookie. Like,
we like Sabonis. Yeah. Paul George. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that one, it will continue to befuddle. But on the bright side, Miles Turner is going to be an absolute monster this year. I'm very excited to see him.
Yeah, his 2K rating suggests so.
What was his 2K rating?
84, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they're hyping him up a little bit.
I was about to get defensive if it was higher than Embiid's.
You need to switch your mindset a little bit outside of Embiid, dude.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Who's the next one?
Well, no, because you brought up Kawhi. We talked about this somewhat last week in the two-way player conversation.
Yeah, I knew you were going there. Yeah.
Yeah. Kawhi or Kevin Durant?
You're asking me or Sarah? Because I'm guessing
I feel like we both already answered this, didn't we, Mark?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we are probably in pretty big agreement here, yeah.
You're both taking Kawhi.
Yeah.
Yep.
However,
no.
It's not in a landslide.
No.
It's not in a landslide by any means, you know, it's close. And I think even our Spurs homer will acknowledge it's close.
For sure. But it's still Kawhi.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm taking Kevin Durant there, and I'm not thinking twice about it. Kawhi's great. Kawhi's probably the third or fourth best player in the NBA, but Kevin Durant is number two as far as I'm concerned. And I just... his offensive ceiling... I mean, like, I feel like it is harder to replicate... We saw last year, Sarah, we talked about this last week, how... yeah, Kawhi is, like, one of the best defenders in the NBA, if not the best, but it's easier to take him out of the game by just hiding him, basically, or, like, making him... hiding the guy that he's guarding and just, like, push him to the perimeter. And we saw that a lot during the regular season. Whereas, like, it's impossible to take Kevin Durant out of the game unless you're double-teaming him or you have Kawhi Leonard. So I think it's harder to... it's harder to counter KD's offense than it is Kawhi's defense.
And it's a good thing Kawhi's a terrific offensive player as well.
It's like, you gotta stop him still too, though.
Yeah.
And it's easier said than done.
That's true.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good argument, but yeah, I mean, I think his offense is so darn close. KD has that length that kind of pushes him over. Mm. Where he can just shoot over anybody. But Kawhi, there's so many different wells that he can go to now, too, that I mean, he's going to get his buckets. I just can't wait for this season. I just cannot wait. Oh,
man. Yeah.
Yeah.
The main argument for Kawhi really is also in the grand scheme of things, because when you look at that Spurs roster from last season, outside of Kawhi, it was somewhat putrid, right? I mean,
it wasn't hot garbage.
Yeah, it was. And what did they win? 61?
Yeah.
61? I mean, that's...
Durant could never.
That's not what I'm saying, though. Don't put me on the hot seat.
I'm saying it, Martin.
Oh, you're saying
it.
Okay, fair enough. All right. But, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous what he did last year. So, it depends on what side of the fence you are. If you believe Kawhi just had one of those epic seasons that may not come back, then sure. But... you know, it's him in the Spurs system. He has Pop on the bench. I think we're only scratching the surface with Kawhi. But I know this is only about this year. It's only about this year.
Exactly.
But I'm still going to pick Kawhi because now KD is satisfied.
I don't know, man. He got his ring. All that money because he wants to go again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's been three long
Kawhi's
years.
Be even better this year too.
Yeah, but it's been three long really years did. For Kawhi lifting that Finals MVP.
Yeah,
and then he saw KD do it, and he's like, "Mm-mm, damn you, Sarsa Pachulia, damn you," because I had him at least for one game. I had him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going Kawhi. Still going Kawhi.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next one. With this one's gonna hurt my feelings, guys, but we gotta do it. Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns,
Cat.
Sarah, who you got?
Morton already just jumped in there.
Yeah. Sarah, you also Towns.
No, honestly, I was leaning Embiid. I've been poring over their little synergy profiles here.
Don't give him the satisfaction, Sarah. Don't give him more ammunition. Come on now.
Give it to the dark side.
No.
I will say that, of course, you know, Embiid wasn't able to be on the floor as much as any of us would have liked.
Yes.
But Cat's offensive numbers are significantly more impressive at the moment. As far as like his post, like his ratings on just about every facet of offense are excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, Embiid is not there yet, but you feel like he has the skill to be there. And defensively, you know, that was really, I always kind of lean defensively, I guess that's my habit. And I just felt like if you have the chance, you know, we're not taking injuries into account, that's like a whole different conversation, but if you have the chance to get a guy who could potentially be that much of a game changer defensively, I'm always going to lean in that direction, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's such a tough call, but I think I would pick Embiid. Yeah.
Yeah,
you just ruined the next three episodes. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, obviously, if we are taking injuries into account, I think all three of us would take Towns in a landslide, which is unfortunate, but you just can't rely on Embiid to stay healthy at this point. But in a magical world where knee injuries and foot injuries and back injuries do not exist,
then Cat is still the choice.
No, he's not that good of a defender.
Yet.
Yeah, but like, is he going to substantially improve this year, do you think?
Yes. Yes, I think so. Look at what he did offensively. Look at what he did. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Sarah, you were about to say something there.
No, you're good. I feel like Morton is overrating Thibodeau's effect. Because you think that Wiggins is going to be a really good defender, that Cat's going to be...
No, I have serious doubts about Wiggins, though.
Okay, but we think he's going to get better.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. Like, we've seen nothing so far to indicate that. Maybe. Hopefully there's going to be at least some improvement for both those guys next year. But I have to see it to believe it first. I'm not that optimistic.
I think we saw it with Cat when LaVine was healthy before the ACL tear. Because when LaVine and Wiggins had it going offensively, you could see that Towns made a concerned effort of spreading out his game a little bit. He would conserve energy offensively and then establish himself a little bit more defensively. When LaVine went down, he had to take on this larger offensive role, and then he sort of had to sacrifice the defensive end, which is never optimal. Now you have Jimmy Butler, now you have Taj Gibson as well, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, turn his game around a little bit and be more of a two-way player. He might see a drastic decline in stats overall. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if Towns actually was below 22 points, or maybe even like 20 flat. I wouldn't even be surprised. But then maybe, you know, the rebounds go up, the blocks go up, the steals go up, the intensity go up, the defensive efficiency goes up, whatever. But I just think that level of talent in Towns, I mean, he does everything. The first player of all time ever to have 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 100 threes, and 100 blocks in a season. I mean, and he did that at the age of 21. That's ridiculous. I mean, age 22 season? Come on. That's... Embiid was 22 this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we technically don't really know. We are 1 year behind.
That is true. I'm just gonna say one thing. Block percentage, Embiid 7.7. Towns, 2.9.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
I mean, that, like, the Sixers were a playoff caliber team when Embiid was healthy and he played last year, and they were worse than the Nets when he did not. Like, he has shown he can single-handedly anchor a top 10 defense, and, you know,
be the focal point offensively too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, like he scored 20 points in what, 25 minutes, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. No, I mean, again, he's great. Like as you opened with, every one of these players are great. I mean, that's not the debate, obviously. But you know, again, my perception of Embiid, it's just impossible for me to escape this nagging feeling that he will go down. I can't separate the fact that him healthy is—it's just illogical to me to assume that Embiid is healthy. He's missed the first two seasons, and then what, 51 games last year. It's just so inwoven in my mind with him and injuries that it's just like there's no way to separate them. But I mean, with him healthy for 82 games, it's a toss-up then. Is a toss-up allowed? Because they don't give you that right.
No, a toss-up is not allowed.
Fine, cat, then.
Sounds and you like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Morton is wrong on that one. Let's move on.
Your team drafted Jahlil Okafor.
Hey, no. He's going to be a Bull soon. Just you wait. All right, let's go to... Oh, yeah, point guards now. We're going to move away from the bigs. Kyrie Irving or Damian Lillard? Sarah, where do you go on that one?
This one to me is almost a legit toss-up. Of course, they've all been close, haven't they? You're killing me, Brian.
I know. This is literally what Ian does. Like, every, at least once a week, he'll come up with these, like, evil would-you-rathers. I'm like, it, like, makes me think for 15 minutes why I should be doing something else. Oh, man, this is really good.
Yeah. We need to get him bad on the podcast, you know?
Yeah.
when he's not in a car.
Right.
You know what? I'm gonna say Dame.
Yeah.
On this one. They both are capable of doing the same things, but I feel like, and this might be part of the reason Kyrie wants the trade. Maybe it just feels that way because, you know, he's got LeBron next to him and he doesn't have to always do it. But I think, you know, there's these games where he kind of disappears for lulls, like a week or so. And Damian kind of always has to be on. Neither of them are great defenders. We know that. Kyrie, it's just, he's got these blips too, though, where he's completely unguardable. And Sanitarians remember that in particular. Yeah.
57.
Yeah, he has moments. I mean, and he's done it to the Warriors. It's like, you know, the best defensive teams in the league. He can do it too. It does not matter what you throw at him. At certain times, he just will destroy you. But I think kind of those hills and valleys are more... And Damian has them too, but I think just for what he gives you consistently pound for pound every game, I would go Damian.
More you as well?
Yeah, look, here's the thing with Damian. If you look at his entire career, he's averaged over 200 made three-pointers per season.
Mm.
On average. Combine that with the fact that he gets to the line more than Kyrie, connects on 89% over the past two seasons, 89% plus even. He's still flirting with like the 6-7 assists. He's actually a pretty good rebounder for his size. Mm. And he's also like slightly better defensively. He has those games where he can tune it up just a little bit, but it's not even worth mentioning because, as Sarah alluded to, both are horrid. I mean, just absolutely horrible. He doesn't have the same creative ball handling as Kyrie, but that just, a lot of time when Kyrie does it, let's be honest, you know, he just, at times he just dances and wastes energy. Like, it's not always as effective as one might believe it is. Like, he stands out there, he's crossing over, he's dancing, he's jabbing, and then he finally drives by and then his layup comes up short. Damian is more, I think he's more assertive. That's probably the thing. He's more calculated with his drives. Like, he understands when he goes into the paint what his goal is. Alright, I'm nearing the basket here, I can sidestep here, I can finish with my left, whatever, you know. He's more calculated that way. He's just a cleaner scorer, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And given that neither is a plus defensively, then what's left? Offense.
Right. Right.
So, Dame.
Yeah, this one's... Sarah, you had it right. I think of any of the ones we've done so far, this is the biggest toss-up. And I think just to be a contrarian, I'm going to pick Kyrie, just because we've seen him, you know, both have the reputation of being good clutch scorers. Like, we've seen both just bury teams, especially in the playoffs, like, just end them. Kyrie obviously did it to the Warriors in Game 7 in 2016. Dame against the Rockets, I want to say, a couple years ago as well. So, like, they both have that reputation. But, yeah, I think, Mort, you were the one who said it. Like, we don't know. We haven't seen Kyrie, at least the last couple of years, without LeBron, or at least for an extended stretch. And I thought Dave Griffin was on The Jump this week on ESPN. And he said something, you know, they were talking about the Kyrie trade rumor and the trade request. And Dave Griffin was like, he said, basically, we had an opportunity whenever LeBron James would sit out for a game, or like when he took that 2-week midseason sabbatical, like, we had an opportunity to build a more cohesive identity without him. So, like, we could have done more to empower Kyrie then, and we just didn't. Like, we didn't make the overall changes that we needed to, and we kind of just tried to run the same sets just without LeBron, and that didn't work so well. So, like, I do really hope, for Kyrie's sake, that he gets traded this year so we can see what he can do leading a team, like Dame's had the opportunity to do. And maybe he falls flat on his face, but I don't know. I the more I think about his trade request, it seems absurd, because why would you want to give up the chance to win a ring every year or be in the finals every year? But if you're really, you know, if you don't want to go down as LeBron James' sidekick in the NBA lore, then it makes sense that you want a chance to prove yourself. And I think, you know, again, it's really close, but I think Kyrie, with an offense built around him, could be just as effective, if not slightly more, than Dame. And the fact, really, the tiebreaker is we've seen Kyrie, Sarah, as you said, we've seen him dissect the Warriors, dissect the Spurs, like, destroy the best defenses in the league. And if you have that type of, you know, obviously you want your point guard to be able to run the offense both for himself and others, and you don't want him to play hero ball, but the fact he can, like, you know, in a late game situation, if you need a bucket, like, he can create it in transition off of a pull-up on a drive to the basket. Like, he has multiple ways of creating offense for himself and others. So, leaning slightly Kyrie, but I don't feel good about it. Let's stay with Blazers guards. CJ McCollum or Bradley Beal? Sarah?
Go Morton first.
Okay, yeah, I was kind of hoping Sarah would go first on this one. Because, yeah, that's the toughest one yet, in my opinion. Because that's where you have to, like, factor in all the things that we can't factor in. Age, production, injuries, whatnot. I think I gotta go with CJ. I think I gotta go with CJ. It's close. It's because when he has these opportunities to play point, when Dame is out, the offense does run fairly smooth for a guy who's like a traditional shooting guard. They're both a bit undersized, but looking at CJ, what he's doing, he has this ability to just explode. He's become like an all-star in his own right. Shoots 91 from the line, 42 from downtown on high volume, almost, you know, 48% actually from the field as well, just efficient. I feel he's the more secure player. Like, he's the security blanket, like, if you compare the two. Like, that's the safest choice. Bradley Beal could go the other way.
Yeah, I mean, this past season was obviously his big breakout. McCollum, we've seen it now for two seasons. So, for that reason, I can see calling McCollum the safer player of the two. Sarah, have you made your decision?
This is rough.
If it helps, I'm going Beal, so you can be the tiebreaker.
You are. See, I don't think that does help, because then I'm the tiebreaker, like you said. Good golly. Who's this? Beal had a really good shooting season last year. Yeah. Oh, man.
On high volume, no, that's the one that's difficult, because, look, yeah. the guy increased his three-point attempts from 4.9 to 7.2 and even increased his three-point field goal percentage. Like, he made 223 triples last year compared to 105 the year before and 106 the year before that. I just did it with insane efficiency.
Yeah. Give me Beal.
I get it. I totally get it.
Great too.
Yeah, I get it. This is the one where I don't mind, like, that everyone disagrees, because I get it. Like, I'm flip-flopping as we speak right now.
There is no right answer here, I don't think. But for me, I mean, Mort, you're right that CJ can run point a little more than Beal can, but Beal's 2 inches taller than McCollum, so I feel like Beal might have the tools to eventually become at least an average defender, where I feel like McCollum at 6'3", he's just, as long as he's playing shooting guard, he's never going to have a chance against a guy like Klay Thompson.
Wasn't there a thing about Bradley Beal's height being a little bit manipulated?
Like they listed him as higher, as taller.
A little bit tall, because I remember when he came in back in 2012, like, he was on most draft sites, he was listed at 6'3", 6'4", himself.
Oh,
and then
really?
suddenly, oh, boom, he's 6'5". Like,
oh,
really?
Interesting.
It just came out of the blue. But, okay, he was very, very young when he came into the league. He was 19.
Yeah, right.
So that would have made sense, yeah.
Yeah. Embiid grew 2 inches. It's always possible.
That's true. That is true.
All right, let's move on. We're going back to the big men. Well, this is straight from Ian, and it absolutely killed me. Clint Capella or Nerlens Noel? Sarah, do you want first crack at this?
Yeah, I'll take it. Since I threw it to Mort last time. This one I've gone back and forth on since you proposed it hours ago. I initially was Clint Capella. And then, honestly, I haven't watched a lot of Nerlens, so, like, I had what little free time that I actually had. I pulled up and just had, like, film on a loop on YouTube, just let it run, everything. And, man, Nerlens is pretty good. That is true. And he's got, I'm assuming, I didn't even look at the measurements, but he seems like he's got a little length on Clint Capella, so there's that. He can be a little more disruptive at the rim, because Clint is actually a decent shot blocker as well. But and then I saw, was privileged to see the film from Capella. I think it was Game 1 Western Conference, semis, against the Spurs. Mm-hmm. He had 20 and 13, 2 blocks, 8 of 10 for the field. Mm-hmm. That was good fun. but of course, he was going against our middle is a little soft in the middle, so there is that. I think I'm leaning Noel. Yeah, I totally went the other direction from how I started, but Capella is very good too. Like we said, all these guys are good. What cracked me up the most though, when I was looking it up, okay, because I was like, okay, they're both good role guys. I wanted to see, like, as far as mid-range shot, because I couldn't imagine.
Oh God.
Either of their shots in my head, so I had to look them up. Mm-hmm. I know that Capella struggled with his free throws. But the best part of trying to figure that all out, like, I looked at his shooting splits, and I swear, he only took, from 10 to 15 feet, he only took 4 shots all year. The Rockets are the best, man.
Yeah,
these numbers are so ridiculous. So that's incredible. And he made one of them, so.
There you go.
Yeah, 25% at 4 shots.
His average distance on a shot is 2 feet.
Incredible. Yeah, I'll go with the Noel for just a little bit more versatility, a little more potential for versatility. And he is a tremendous shot blocker.
Yeah. Mort, how about you?
Noel is by far the better defender. Capella is the better scorer, and he's the better raw rebounder. That is not insignificant. Usually, like Sarah said, I agree with her in regards to I would always lean towards the defensive-minded player, but I do get the sense that Nerlens will always have a sense of offensive limitations that he probably won't be able to get, you know, to get ahead of, and that worries me a lot. Then I looked at Capella and his offensive woes that he started out having during the, you know, his early parts of his career, where he was an abysmal free throw shooter. To some point, still is, but he made drastic improvements. Mm-hmm. So if he can become like a 65-68% free throw shooter, while being, you know, the 64-65% shooter under the rim, and a high caliber rebounder, and even a high volume scorer around the rim, then I'm probably going to take it, because his defense is not bad. I mean, it's not Nerlens Noel good, but it's not bad either. So I'm going to go with Clint Capella, but if you spend an hour trying to convince me, I could be convinced about Noel, but don't you dare do it.
Don't put that out there. Oh, man.
I'm taking Noel, and I don't think it's that close. I just think his defensive... I mean, he's not even a Sixer anymore. I still feel this way about him. He's so defensively gifted, not only as a shot blocker, but his hands are just so active defensively. Like, his steals numbers are absurd.
Yeah.
And he, like, back when he was on the team, you know, like, everyone makes fun of Robert Covington now because he's always, like, near the league lead in deflections. Nerlens was right there with him back when they were teammates. Like, he just, he disrupts. You know, it's great that he gets steals and blocks, but he's just so disruptive. Like, he just sticks his hands in passing lanes, and he has the defensive IQ that even, you know, if you force a player to pass the ball elsewhere, that's not going to show up in the stat sheet anywhere, but you're still making things more difficult for an opposing offense.
And that's something we saw with Kawhi a lot as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think Nerlens just, he has the gift of knowing where to go. I think, you know, if he ever signs a contract with the Mavericks, like, who knows, he might be playing in Europe next year, but assuming he's back at the NBA with Dallas, he's going to have a monster year. Especially with Dennis Smith Jr. just running constant pick and rolls with him. So I think, you know, his numbers, obviously he's got the knee issues, so that's scary. But we're assuming all of that's cleared up. And, you know, his numbers as a sophomore weren't, I mean, they were still really good, but he played out of position half the year because he was playing next to Okafor. And then this past year, he just didn't get much run. So we haven't really seen him break out since, frankly, his rookie season. But I think this year in Dallas, he's gonna remind everyone that he is one of the better young centers in the league. All right, this one's gonna be fun. Isaiah Thomas or Mike Conley, Mort?
Well, I would be a hypocrite if I didn't also lean to defense on small guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think that said everything.
Fair enough. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, honestly, this one was one of the easier ones for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't spend as much time on. And a lot of it, too, is because my team played Conley in the first round, and I got to see a lot of him, and he was incredible. He honestly put the fear of God into me a few times. he had that type of series, and he's obviously capable of that. So not only does he defend a little bit, whereas Isaiah doesn't really, but I feel like he's capable of, maybe he's not quite as explosive offensively as Isaiah is, but he's really, really good. So I would take Conley.
Yeah, I'm with you both. Although I don't want to, like, shortchange Isaiah here, because, like, what he did last season was really, it was phenomenal. So, you know, when I'm evaluating all of these picks, I'm basically thinking, like, all right, what's the weakest point for each player, and whose weakness is more exploitable? And so, you know, as you both said, like, Isaiah Thomas, obviously a very bad defender. Conley, he's not a threat to go off for 30 points a game most nights. So he's, as you said, Sarah, he's, like, not as offensively explosive as Isaiah, but that's not as much of an issue. Like, if you... It's just so much easier to target Isaiah in just constant pick and rolls and just force him off of the floor, whereas Conley is such a good two-way player that there's no way. You just have to hope he's having a bad night, basically. So, sorry, Boston fans. Enjoy maxing Isaiah out next year and capping the ceiling on your team. All right, let's move on. Who is in the... Oh, this one's good. All right, Gary Harris or Rodney Hood, Sarah?
There again, I kind of have to recuse myself a little bit because I didn't have time to look into this one and I haven't seen Gary Harris play a lot. So I want to lean Rodney Hood, but that's only because I've watched him a little more, so I don't feel like I could really make an informed decision on that one.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I like what Rodney Hood brings, but I just don't know enough about what Gary Harris brings.
Mort, how about you?
So this is tricky because we're supposed to select one of these for the upcoming season. Rodney Hood's role is obviously going to increase given the departure of Gordon Hayward, and he is a very capable scorer. That's indisputable. He's not a strong defender, and Gary Harris is not as explosive an offensive player, but he is a solid two-way guy. It's almost like the Mike Conley, Isaiah Thomas debate all over again, just with shooting guards. Really.
Mm. Yeah.
But here's the thing. If Rodney Hood comes out next year and he busts for 22 and is able to do that efficiently, then that changes the conversation. So I have to look at his body of work right now. And for me, it's Gary Harris in not a landslide, but there's a significant step down to Hood. However, I acknowledge the fact that Hood could change the entire perception that is of him in 5 months' time.
Yeah, that's where I am too. I would take Harris now, but I'm expecting both of these dudes to break out because, you know, Gallinari's gone now as well, so Millsap's going to take a lot of that offensive responsibility, but Harris is entering a contract year. I think he's going to have a big year. Hood, you know, both of these guys dealt with injuries a lot last year. Hood, I feel like he had such a really impressive breakout sophomore season, and he took a slight step back this last year, and I'm assuming it was just the injuries, but you know, I feel a little more confident projecting Gary Harris to break out as like a two-way force than I do Rodney Hood. So for that reason I go Harris, but again, both of these guys, I think both of them have all-star upside, I would say. Like, I could easily see either one, maybe not in the Western Conference, but like either of them played in the East. I feel like in a year or two time, they could easily be all-star caliber.
You know, what I've been thinking for about a year now is Detroit really should get Gary Harris and then just give him the keys to the team.
Detroit had something to trade.
Right. That's a rub, of course. But that would be a team where he's, you know, he has Stan Van Gundy on the sideline. He does have like a capable center around him. He would have Reggie Jackson, who could take some offensive responsibility off of him, but still just give Gary Harris the keys to an organization. I wouldn't mind. I was seeing what he could do as like the main guy.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could do some combination of like Avery Bradley for Gary Harris and take one of Denver's bad contracts back in return. Take Fareed or take... Denver doesn't really have that many bad contracts, I guess, but
Yeah, but Detroit is capped, so I don't think they could.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, God. Why? Oh, someone take Stan Van Gundy's team president role away immediately. That is terrible. right. Let's move on to... All right, this is a fun one that we just came up before we started. So I'm going to throw this to you right away. Jamal Murray or D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah, so when you mentioned that to me, I was like, oh, obviously, you know, D'Angelo, you know, number two pick, all that. But then it's, you kind of have to think about it a little bit because Jamal Murray was explosive and he's young. He's got a lot of upside. That jump shot is only going to get so much better, and he could already be better this year. He could already break out this year. But I'm sticking with my initial decision because it's Brooklyn. D'Angelo will have every opportunity that he did not have with the Lakers. A fresh start, you know, a friend, you know, a coach that is player friendly, a GM that is player friendly. There seems to be a plan in play, and he'll be surrounded by shooters and a system that encourages him to shoot the long ball. Everything just oozes D'Angelo is going to get better. And that's why I pick him for now. But Jamal Murray, I mean, it's not lost on me what he's doing in Denver. But you also have to take into account Gary Harris, as we just spoke about, because if he's breaking out, he's going to be playing, what, 32, 35 minutes a game? And he's, like, primarily a shooting guard. He's not a guy who's going to slide over to the one a lot. But and Jamal Murray, I know people are, like, liking him in a sort of pseudo-point guard role. I'm not sure that's the answer. It's better than Moutier, obviously, so that might be forced upon him. But he's, like, a legit shooting guard, though.
Yeah.
And I'm completely bought into, like, the positionless NBA. But, like, where do you have your ball handling in Denver if Jamal Murray and Gary Harris is your starting backcourt?
Jokic.
Yeah, well... I get that in a half-court setting, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really want to go full-on point center for a guy who's only 22?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's talk that Emmanuel Mudiay has been having a good summer, so...
Well...
Hope springs eternal for Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah.
Well, you still have Jameer Nelson, just as a...
That's true.
A veteran backup, if needed.
And you have Paul Millsap, who can initiate the offense as well.
Yeah.
So I get... Okay, fair enough, given that there... I completely forgot about Millsap for a second.
Yeah. And Wilson Chandler is not... He's not, like, a great passer by any means, but, like, all five of those guys can create.
Yeah, they can at least handle the ball some. So if it's a collective responsibility...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it could work. Still not sold on it, though. I would still prefer him to see him run off screens a lot. Corner shots.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be the full-time ball handler if they do use him as their starting quote-unquote point guard.
I think
a lot of the creation responsibilities will be Jokic and Millsap more than... I mean, I think Harris can create for himself, too. I think Murray would be low on the totem pole in terms of creation. I think he would be running off screens a lot.
Oh, and there's Will Barton, too, who can handle the ball. And you also have Mason Plumlee, who can handle the ball and pass out of the double. Okay, you know what?
Right.
I'm sold.
Although Mason Plumlee, he joins the ranks of Nerlens and Jamichael Green as the free agents, the restricted free agents who have yet to sign because the market dried up and they're grumpy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, all of them, I assume, are going to be back with their original teams because no one else... feel like if you wanted to bid on them, but today is August 11th, free agency has been going on for 40 plus days, you know, probably would have happened by now.
When did Tristan Thompson sign? Like, it was really late.
He was in October, I think.
Yeah.
Right
before the season.
Yeah. I'm expecting at least one of those. Nico, too, with the Bulls.
Like, oh,
I'm
right,
expecting
yeah.
one of those to go down to the wire, but... At this point, it feels safe to assume that all those guys will be back with the original.
It's not a hot take per se. I would not be surprised if Nico goes back to Real Madrid, or to a Spanish team. I would not be surprised if he looked at the current situation, both with the Bulls and knowing that they have team control, and just went, nope, If I can't get out of this, then I'm going to go back and win titles in Europe, because you, Bulls.
Yeah, that would be... Oh, I just mentioned at the top of the show that I put my Bulls fantasy preview out today, and it's by far the shortest one I've written so far. I've done 10 so far. They have no one of interest. It's like Dwayne Wade, Zach LaVine, if he's healthy, Robin Lopez, and then Nico. I just assumed Nico was coming back, but if Nico does not come back, they will have three players worth drafting this year, which is by far the lowest. So, good job, Bulls.
Oh, good. Hey, Brian, you wrote about the Bulls? That's great news. Here, have a draft pick on courtesy of Gar Foreman.
Thank you. do I have to pay you $3.5 million for it?
Obviously, because we're all about the money.
Right. Sarah, what do you say in D'Angelo Russell versus Jamal Murray?
Now, see, though, all of the conversation that you guys just had was, like, why I asked earlier, are we taking into account the team that they're on?
Yeah,
because
you're
talking about, like, minutes played and, you know, see that. But it's hard to separate, like, if you're going to look at how they do this year to try to judge. But, yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards D'Angelo as well. And it's not that I don't think Jamal can eventually get even better. But, yeah, if we're looking at just next year, I think D'Angelo is going to have a pretty big year.
Mm-hmm.
And I really got to watch the Nuggets more. It's not for lack of want to, but yeah, last year it just didn't work out. But next year, I'm going to put them toward my priority list, toward the top.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say D'Angelo.
Yep, me too. I still believe D'Angelo. Don't prove us wrong. Please break out this year. I think Kenny Atkinson's going to be really good for him. I'm expecting a big year out of him.
So wait a second. Sarah just brought up something interesting. If we were going to, like, rank league pass teams, not going through all 30, but, like, who's, like, in your top 3 or 5 even? I don't know. You don't have to go in the top 3 or 5. I mean, for me, it's probably some sort of combination of Philly, Minnesota, Denver, Utah because of Donovan Mitchell, and then San Antonio, I think, because Kawhi.
You know, let's save this for next week. Let's do league pass rankings next week.
Then I just spoiled mine. Okay.
Yeah, he basically named, like, all of mine, too, Morton.
We'll do, like, top to bottom.
Ones, but...
We'll do all 30 teams.
All 30?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, the Bulls will be unwatchable. We know that. So, spoiler alert, Chicago fans, you don't need to listen to find out where we rank them.
Yeah,
let's go. We'll save that for next week, because that's a really fun idea and a good way to spend an August podcast. All right, boy, we are gonna wrap this up with this sadistic one that you came up with. Chris Dunn or Cameron Payne?
Evil.
that silence.
Yeah,
here, that deafening silence.
That was just a little. That was a little hat tip to Bulls fans out there, because this is supposedly the two point guards of the future in Chicago, which you gave up a lot for, and neither really had impressive seasons beforehand. So, Sarah, I'm just going to throw it to you. Who's your pick, Chris Dunn or Cameron Payne?
This is horrid. I'm going Dunn because... Even if neither of these guys do anything for you on the floor, at least I know that Dunn isn't going to be doing some strange dance on the sidelines. So, Chris Dunn.
Oh, God. I don't even have a response. I jokingly made that remark because I did not have a response. I just find them so... Yeah, there's no appeal to either. I guess Chris Dunn plays a little bit of defense. So, that's what I'm building my case upon. Chris Dunn plays a little bit of defense. Ergo, Chris Dunn.
Can I pick option C, which is move my team to Seattle?
Go for it. although, just get the owner to Seattle instead. That would be a better start. Like, keep the Bulls in Chicago. That's fair. Just kidnap Jerry Reinsdorf to Seattle. That's okay.
Right.
Seattle's been through too much. Why would you want to do that?
No, I want.
Oh yeah, you know that's a fair point actually.
I want to do, like, the expansion draft thing, and I don't want either of those guys on my team. I just want I want a team in Seattle instead of watching either one of them point guard my team at any point.
Oh, that's so bad.
All right, guys, that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you to all the listeners out there who stuck with us through this madness. We promise we will get back to real basketball soon, but it's August, so we're going to have a couple more irreverent weeks. So we'll do league pass rankings next week. We'll start our division previews pretty close to September. In the meantime, check us out at the NBA Pod on Twitter. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too, Brian.